Hi, and welcome to episode 69 of Fresh Out of Tokens podcast. This is Tanya, also known as Cypher Tier. And somewhere out there in the great digital wilderness, and real wilderness, maybe, sort of, is David, if you would like to say hello.
Hello.
I don't know if you're actually in wilderness. I've never been out where you are, so.
I am in a town.
Well, that's good. I don't want wilderness to come and attack you.
That would be good. No wilderness death, please.
No, we'll leave that for video games and bears.
I would be more worried about my cats. It's the animals we let into the house that...
Oh, I see.
Are probably the most dangerous.
We'll domesticate them quickly. And that lovely voice that you hear is Leisha Riddle of Project Solus.
Hello.
And she's an amazing artist, and I'm very, very glad that she's here with us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So before we get into questions with you, let's get our usual intro out of the way, and then we can jump into learning more about you and all your cool stuff you're doing. So for those listening, this is Fresh Out of Tokens, and we have teas and other items in the I Neediverse Games spreadsheet shop, where we split the profits 50-50 with our friend Chachi Bobinks, and we have a blog to complement the show. Follow us over at outoftokenscast.com. If you have questions, compliments, or guest feedback, or would like to be a guest, feel free to drop us a note there or over at freshouttokens@gmail.com. And please follow us on Twitter at @outoftokenscast. And musical accompaniment for Fresh Out of Tokens is provided by Mike Moody. You can hear more of her work at soundcloud.com/MikeMoody-1. And she will finally be joining us behind the mic next week, so you can hear the person behind the music. And with that out of the way, Leisha, I've had a chance to meet you and see you panel at GX and watch a lot of your work. But for those folks who don't know you, tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do.
Well, I'm an artist, an illustrator from Toronto. I studied animation, like television and feature animation at Sheridan College. And right now I'm making Project Solus, which is my comic about superheroes in Toronto.
Cool.
I've worked in games for 6 years, and now I'm just maxing, relaxing, acting all cool.
Awesome. Well, we'll hear a lot more about Project Solus as we go through the episode.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. The second question we usually ask is, what is your gaming origin story, or how did you get into gaming?
Like, just playing games or getting into the actual industry? Because they're both...
Either? Both?
Okay, let's do getting into games, I guess, first. I loved anime. I mean, that's pretty obvious by my work. But I discovered Final Fantasy, and I think I mentioned this in my talk at GX, that I really identified with the characters in Final Fantasy, so I started playing fairly late in the series, because... my brother played Super Mario and stuff, but I was never really into that, and I was scared of Metroid. There's a lava monster in the first Metroid game that made me have nightmares for 2 weeks. But I played Final Fantasy VII and X and X-2. And then I am still occasionally playing games. I'm playing BeamNG.Drive and turning cars into Tesseracts right now in Stardew Valley, religiously. But... how I got started in games is actually pretty interesting because, like I said, I started in... I studied television and feature animation, so not games at all. And right as I graduated, there was a studio that went out of business, so 400 jobs in Toronto were lost because of the studio going under. And so all of the professionals were taking all the jobs that the grads were going to get. So most of us just ended up freelancing or working remote while that happened, but my friend referred me to Game Loft. But it was a good 3 years. I mean, like, it's a good 3 years to tack onto my resume, so there's that. It was just sort of a recommendation, word of mouth. I hope that wasn't, like, the most boring answer ever.
Hey, it is what it is. We can't, you know, like, most questions are not gonna have, like, a really, you know, epic tale behind them.
Yeah, like, I journeyed up the hill and found my first NES cartridge. No, I...
But see, no, that would be your epic quest. That would work.
And then I had nightmares about Metroid for 2 weeks.
Metroid's scary, man, especially when you're a little kid.
Yeah, I was 4 and there was that lava monster, and I still don't know its name. but it had like a gajillion eyes, and it just looked like a giant zit, and I was so scared of it, and I kept having nightmares that it was going to come into my bedroom and kill me.
That's legit. That's totally legit.
Yeah.
I mean, there's stuff in games now that freaks me out. I'm like, nope, done with you, game. I'm leaving. Goodbye.
Like Five Nights at Freddy's?
I won't even watch a stream of that. I saw like 2 minutes and I was like, done. Nope. Mm-mm. Bye.
I have to be on a stream this October with Five Nights at Freddy's and I'm so scared.
Nope. Mm-mm. Peace be with you, because it wouldn't be me.
At least it'll be safe so everyone can hear me crying.
Okay. Oh, wow. Nope. I'm sorry. But one of the things I wanted to really, really talk about was your great talk last year at GamerX 3.
Oh, yeah.
And that was creating characters and stories with ethnic dysphoria. And we'll make sure that there's a link for our listeners in the show notes when you are listening to this. And I want to know what, I mean, I already know, but for our listeners' benefit, what prompts you to want to talk about it and what made you decide to pitch the panel to GX3?
Oh, gosh. Well, most recently, I think it applies now, is that there's just a huge misrepresentation of adoption in media. This is something that I was watching. Sorry, I'm trying to remember the name of the show. Lie to Me. I was watching Lie to Me. And a child was adopted, and like they were the same like skin color and ethnicity as their parents, so that they didn't have to deal with that. But the child, quote unquote, had issues, and there weren't like specific abuse from like her previous family or anything. It was just issues, and it was issues about her adoption. And I'm like, all right, you know. If the child knew that she was adopted and the parents were cool with it, and she was cool with it, then there's no issues about the adoption, dog. Like, it's fine. If there was abuse in her family, then yeah, she has issues, but it's not about being adopted. Get that right first. Anyway, no, that's not why I submitted it, but I had to bring that up because it drove me up the wall. But I wanted to talk about it because, well, God, there's just so many reasons.
You can give multiple reasons. It's all good.
Yeah, I know. I got emotionally overwhelmed for a second. I just felt like I had to talk about how I came to where I am now with my character designs, and how I got there, because it felt irresponsible. It felt irresponsible to just be like, because there's so many, like, it's just whitewashed. Media is whitewashed. It always has been and always will be. And my family is white. I'm not white. So growing up, that was kind of a weird disconnect, but like, I'm cool with it now, and I'll always have, like, as long as my family's around, I'll always have white privilege. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That was something that I spoke about in the talk, and I still have that. Like, if I'm with my family, I can get away with a lot more than if I walked into a store, had a problem, and tried to talk to them by myself. And even just like life and financial situations, like I'm way better off than I would be in any other situation. And like the characters that I had to create, like I see things through a very different lens than like a creator whose family matches them. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense.
Like, I want to speak, like, I want to show both sides of the coin if that's possible. Like, I guess that's the best way I can talk about it without rambling for too long.
No, it's, I mean, when we submit panels to conventions, a lot of times it's, you know, there's something behind it. Either it's something, you know, in your case that, you know, this is your expertise, this is your life, you know, something you were able to share with people who came to the panel and later for those who watched it. And the motivation behind a panel can be a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's such a thing as like kind of rambling too long or having too many reasons, because there's so many things that will motivate me to go, I should do a panel or I should write something. So, you know, the fact that you were able to share that life experience and that expertise with people is something I think was great.
Yeah, and I actually just remembered I did like a short form version of that panel at AlterConf when it came to Toronto.
Oh, cool.
And I was kind of thinking about it when GamerX came up. I was like, you know what? This is actually a great talk for GamerX. I really had to think about how I would expand it into like something from 15 minutes to an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But I was able to, thank goodness. And I was able to add some last minute stuff after hearing Evan from Kotaku talk, just about like non-Black creators creating Black characters, like while doing them justice and also not trying to tell their stories for them. Because like I can't tell other people's stories. I can only tell my own.
Yeah.
But my own story is weird as shit.
Hey, but it's your story, and yeah. It's awesome that you told it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you sort of covered this, but we also wanted to ask, how does the ethnic dysphoria you talked about impact your art? And I apologize, I started to watch your talk earlier, and then I had to run some errands, and then I didn't finish it.
Well, that's okay. I was so nervous during that talk. People who were watching me pace outside the room, they were like, okay, you know, do you need like a cigarette, a beer? Can I help you? But honestly, it has impacted Mario. You can see it especially when I was a kid. I only drew white characters because I was like, it's like me. When it obviously clearly wasn't, the little brown girl turns around, look, it's just like me. And it's a blonde girl with blue eyes. And like, I'm like, look at this girl. She's from the Dominican Republic. And she's like white, blonde, blue eyes. Like, I just couldn't see it. I just didn't have that ability to see that. But like now I have like a main character, and I've actually received some flack for it on Tumblr. Like, if you're creating such a diverse comic, why is your main character white? And I'm like, because I want her to be. and also, there's like one white chick. It, calm down. It's okay. there's just a lot of gross assumptions about my decision making. But now the ethnic dysphoria sort of makes me a lot more aware of how my decisions could impact someone like me, and how I want my art to make people who may feel similarly, like about feeling misrepresented or underrepresented in media, feel a little more comfortable.
Well, it's Tumblr. I would not put too much stock in the discourse.
Oh God, yeah.
When you were talking to us before recording, you mentioned you wanted to talk about the psychology you put into your work, and that's something we would like to hear about, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, like I said, I studied feature animation, and there's a huge emphasis on performance. And, like, performance specifically in acting. And that's where I feel like a lot of sort of expressions in art and poses in art get lost, because people only go by what they know of acting and like the very broad strokes. And like, it sounds very silly, but I was watching Lie to Me, and it's not like a good science, it's more of a pseudoscience, but the whole science of micro expressions I found super interesting. And I try and include that in my work. I try and include like a lot more subtle expressions where you know what it is, because everyone has like that universal language of expressions. Like, there's always one expression for anger or contempt or disgust or happiness or sadness. Like, they're all universal across the entire world. And I like to make sure that my expressions are always super duper accurate, to the point of me redoing something like 10 times. But yeah. And I also try and think about genuine human responses to things, instead of like how I would want the plot specifically go, because it does feel manufactured if I try and push it too much one way or the other. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like that's probably the most succinct answer I can give to you about my limited knowledge of psychology and what I put into my comic.
Well, that's good, but a lot of people don't even think about that kind of stuff as they're creating, which is really cool.
Mm. Yeah, like, I just want, especially, like, little small expressions, like, I don't see those enough. They're always, like, the slapstick huge expressions. I just like seeing small changes in the face where it's just like, is she mad? I can't tell, right? And, like, that's the point. You can't tell, like, if you say something wrong and then say you're across the room, Tanya, and then you don't want to look mad, but like there's definitely like a flash of like, oh man, I could slap this person right now, right? Like, because I definitely have that where you have that moment where you're like, oh, I could kill them, but you don't want to say that. And you're just like, oh, yeah, yeah, no. And you're just being polite, like that sort of masked expression. Like, I like having those where it's like I'm trying not to show my expression, but I am definitely, like, it's all over my face. I love that.
Yeah, just, you know, you get that look and people realize that you're giving them that side eye for eternity.
Yeah, it's like the Sisyphean curse, but of side eye.
Yeah. Oh man, if I could give a Sisyphean side eye, that would be like my epic superpower.
I love it. Sisyphean side eye.
That should be it. So David, you have to put that power in your RPG.
Yeah.
Sisyphean side eye.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, like, no matter how much you try and get rid of the side eye, it just gets bigger and stronger and rolls you back down.
Yeah, you just, like, eventually just skulk away because there's no coming back from it. That would be amazing. Yeah, exactly. Well, I really want to get into one of the main reasons I wanted to talk to you and have you on the show and learn more about Project Solus, because it's come a long way since you first talked about it online and, you know, and you've launched a Patreon for it and everything else. So first of all, you know, for those that don't know, what is Project Solus? And then also, what inspired you to start the project?
Okay, so Project Solus is a comic book that takes place in Toronto, and which is something that I just need, more things in Toronto. And it stars Alex Wolf, a 19-20-year-old illustration student, and her life just gets turned to shit because she suddenly has superpowers, and, like, every bureaucratic government system, you have to go through like a rehabilitation program, you have to get licenses, and imagine having superpowers in the city. You probably have to have 2 licenses and like tell your neighbors that you have superpowers, like a sex offender, and you couldn't get an apartment. But yeah, it's just a sort of passion project of mine to tell stories of Torontonians in this sort of superpower setting, but just tell real stories about people. And the main inspiration, well, I made one of my characters when I was 4 in a barn.
Okay.
I was on an art camp, and then I drew this character, and I was like, her name is Lisa Williams, and she is definitely still in the story. And, wow. Yeah, she was a Pokemon trainer back in the day. And the characters, most of them, I created way before I started making Project Solus proper. But the actual inspiration was I wanted to tell, like I said, real stories. And I wanted them to have superpowers and stuff. And they used to be, like, magical girls and, like, just, like, sci-fi superheroes. And then I realized what I wanted was just a story about people in Toronto and superpowers. And I think that was the main inspiration, just not making something that little me wishes they had. Like, cool. If I had read a story with, like, a little 5'3" Indian woman that was, like, Captain America, but Torontonian and Indian, that would be rad. And, like, a half Filipino, like, musical theater star. Yes, perfect.
Well, that's so cool. And it's interesting that you say that it's something you would have wanted little you to have, because I think for those of us that are growing up now, we're really seeing the effect of not having that representation as children.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I was just gonna say Sailor Moon, when they brought it to Canada and America, they like totally whitewashed it. And I was
really?
This is Serena and Amy and Lita. And I'm like, oh, cool. They're like white chicks.
No, that was in the U.S. too.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, oh, cool. They're like white chicks. But like, you watch the, like, the subbed version, and they're straight up Japanese. And you're like, that would have been nice to know. Like that, these cool Asian chicks were running around.
Yeah, but a lot of that is localization stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Because like, I get what they were trying to do, make it more palatable for, like, North America, but it would have still been pretty good if they had just said their Japanese names.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because a lot of stuff that at least, like, I grew up with the Transformer, like, the original Transformers and Voltron and, God, what was it? It was called Thunder, no, it wasn't Thunderbirds.
Thundercats?
Not Thundercats. It got an Americanized name when it came here.
Oh.
And it has something Hawks, and I'm blanking out because it's been that kind of a day.
Hmm.
It may have been Thunderhawks, I don't remember. But it's what they've been revamping now,
right.
You know, and redoing. And it's interesting, though, because as we got older, a lot of us, that if we want to see the original, we went and found the original. But that's not always feasible. Because I don't know if the Japanese cultural stuff would have translated as well.
Mm, yeah. There were some things that I didn't understand. And it's actually funny that you bring up the go and find the original. I went to a used video store, I think in Buffalo, New York, and I found a VHS, like, used and in the bin, Sailor Moon S, the movie, when I was, like, 11. And I watched it, and it was so weird as, like, little 11-year-old me to just get slapped in the face with what Sailor Moon really was. And Sailor Moon S especially had a lot of, like, very Japanese cultural things, like having a leaf fire in the middle of the temple because they burn their garbage there, and just putting yams in it and then taking them out and eating them. And I was just like, what are they doing? Are they just eating the leaves? What is happening right now?
Okay.
And so I looked it up because I didn't understand it. And I'm like, oh, they're in Japan. Oh, they burn their garbage there. And so I learned a bunch about Japan and also that their names were not what they told me their names were.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah.
From a VHS store in Buffalo, New York.
Thank you, VHS Buffalo store.
Yeah. God. Localization, huh?
Yeah, localization is interesting. especially when we get into art, but I think David has a question about art coming up.
Oh, I was actually going to ask, do you want to take that question since I took the two earlier?
Sure.
All right.
Well, since we just totally destroyed my segue.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. One day we'll be in sync on segues. One day. But, you know, since we're talking about originals and art and everything, you know, I'm a big fan of your art.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Because I was just like, it's so pretty. I will, like, hide my one little sketchbook with a flower drawing and never show anyone again. But I was wondering, like, you know, what made you realize that you had artistic talent and what got you into doing it more as something as part of your work?
You know, that's actually a really interesting question, especially after the ethnic dysphoria question and adoption, because I don't think I would have been an artist if I had been with a Filipino family.
Really?
No, because, like, my folks are fairly, like, they're upper middle class. And when I came along, I was 4 years old, and my mom was watching me, because she, you know, you just buy, like, those crappy paint sets from Byway, and it was, like, the watercolor cakes, and you just give them to your child to amuse them for a few hours. And she saw me, and I drew 5 orange blobs, and then I took a pen and drew the cat around it. And she's like, that's a strange technique. And I was going to, like, just, you know, a kid's art camp, and the instructor there was, like, a fine artist from, like, Ontario College for Art and Design. And she showed him and explained how I did it, and he's like, that's called contour line. That's a technique we teach college students. And my mom was like, oh, do you think she has artistic talent? Like, she's obviously pretty good at drawing this dank-ass cat. She didn't say that. She drew this cute cat. So mom just sort of let me flourish from there. She would buy me art supplies. And, like, I just thought I was having fun. I just thought, like, I'm just drawing for tee-hee-ha-ha. Like, mom just doesn't want to, like, have me run amok around a restaurant or anything. She brought, like, little art supply cases everywhere we went so I could just draw everywhere. And then one day I turned to her in grade 5, and the exact words out of my mouth were, I'm going to become a Japanimator.
Okay.
That was the portmanteau that I had come up with. And she was like, okay, sweetie. And I came up with a plan that I was going to go to the art specialist high school, and then I was going to go to Sheridan College, and then I was going to become an animator. And mom's like, all right, cool. And so that was it. I just went full steam ahead on art ever since I was 5, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't think I would have done that had I not had a family that could afford to let me do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing that people don't think about. And, you know, and it's terrible to consider that, you know, a transnational adoptee, transracial adoptee may or may not get some opportunities. If the thing is, even if someone adopts you, doesn't guarantee they'll have means to do stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah, like I was very lucky to be brought into a world that where my folks were doing very well, and they were able to just get me art supplies, even if they weren't necessarily like the best. Like I got like just printer paper and like pens, and I could just draw Sailor Moon whenever I wanted, because I didn't have to do like a paper route, or I didn't have to take up a job in high school. Like I was just able to work on drawing. So.
Exactly.
That's just what I did.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm super grateful for it.
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad that you did it, because you have given us great art in the world.
Thank you.
I mean,
sometimes I feel like it's not worth it, but I think everyone feels that way.
We're our own worst critics, believe me.
When you look at this and you're just like, oh my God, I should have been like an accountant or something. What is this?
Oh God, no. I can't be an accountant. Of all the things in my life that I said I probably should do, that will never cross my lips. David, what's something you ever think of that you may have wound up doing if you weren't doing writing and making your own game?
Well, that's sort of a loaded question. This was my plan B.
Okay.
No, I have a tragic story where what I really wanted to do was I wanted to work in TV, but I couldn't afford to go to film school, so I ended up having to do other jobs.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I'm just gonna move on from that. You talk a lot about diversity in games, and especially character design. What do you think needs to happen to improve representation in games?
I think my short answer would be stop hiring white people. My long answer would be, I don't know, it's complicated, because like the roots are so established in just racial prejudice and misogyny and everything else that we have to either fund better grassroots independent organizations that have more diverse properties, or get better consultation on the bigger AAA games. Like I see like Sam Meggs is working for BioWare now, and like there are other big names who are writers working at other big studios, but I don't even know if that's going to be enough for their next ships, but I hope it is. I'd like it to be. But like you can see across the board that the studios making the quote unquote some of the biggest games are studios that are predominantly white or Caucasian, making white or Caucasian games. And we saw the reaction to Watch Dogs 2 when it was announced. That was a nightmare.
Yeah. And I feel a way about it, because I hated the first game so much that I do not trust that having a black protagonist in 2 will make it any better.
Yeah, I don't think it will, honestly. I did hate play Watch Dogs on my stream. I remember that.
I remember that. I couldn't do it. Nope. Mm-mm.
Oh, God. I was thinking about this earlier, because someone was playing Dragon Age for the first time, just the first one. And they're like, are the elves supposed to be like the indigenous characters? As someone who's indigenous, I don't know how I feel about this. And I'm like, try and make an Asian face in any Dragon Age game and get back to me.
Yeah, well,
I just look like a white chick doing brown face. It was bad.
Yeah. Well, we know how I feel about race in Dragon Age.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, they got that wrong. It's bad to look at and bad to take in with the eyes.
Yeah, they're slowly trying to work on that.
Yeah.
Slowly.
Yeah, I believe them.
Yeah. Speaking of series, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we brought up a lot of different games and stuff that you played. Is there a series that you would like to work on?
I was thinking about this, and I think I'd actually really like to work on a Mass Effect game, because I love me some space and sci-fi. Even though one of my greatest fears is, like, cosmic-related deaths, Mass Effect is okay. I did apply to BioWare, like, 4 times, and I have never gotten a yes, so... But, no, I don't know. I just like that setting. Yeah, I haven't really worked on any game series. I know plenty of people who have, but I have only ever worked on television series.
Oh, cool. What TV have you worked on?
I just most recently wrapped up True in the Rainbow Kingdom, which is a preschool show coming out in 2017 on Netflix. Awesome. It's very cute. It's got a cute little girl protagonist. And it's like a magical girl, but she's 4 and like she solves problems on her own. And like the only villain is like the inability to fix the problem because they're 4, right? So she's trying to use like, oh, and she has wishes. So like she gets 3 wishes per episode, and then she uses those to help her solve the problem. But, like, the wishes don't do it for her. They only help her.
Okay.
So I think that's really interesting.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I really liked it. It was probably my favorite series to work on. Because I worked on other series, and I'm like, this is culturally appropriative, and I feel bad. But it's a paycheck.
Yeah, there's always that factor.
Yeah. Feel free to look up Shimmer and Shine if you want to see cultural appropriation at its finest.
Or The Lion King.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I said it. Y'all can fight me.
No, I don't. No, I ain't fighting.
Oh, I know. I'm just thinking about our listeners. Because I know somebody like, but The Lion King is this. And it's Disney. How could you say that?
You can say anything about Disney. And it's probably true.
Probably.
Dude made entertaining films. They're not necessarily morally good films.
Exactly.
And they're not necessarily entertaining for everyone.
Yep.
Yeah. So, what's next for you aside from Project Solace?
Well, Snapchat contacted me today. That was interesting.
Huh.
Yeah, so maybe. I'm not saying yes, but I'm not saying no. But other than that, I think I'm just going to work on Project Solace until money runs out. I think that's the plan.
Well, you know, that's the end of listener questions, or I'm sorry, questions from us. And we did get a few questions from our listeners, namely Tim, who's a friend of the show, a guest on this week's episode as we record this talk with you. So Tim sent in 3 questions, and I'll take the first one. And I'm curious about this myself, because I don't think we ever had a chance to sit down and just chat about games and art when I saw you last. So he wanted to know, what is one of your favorite games artistically?
I gotta say, I was sitting on this, and I didn't really have an answer, because, like, obviously I love Final Fantasy and all of that, and I love Mass Effect. Those are all very good on the eyes. But I think I'm gonna say Patapon for PSP. I love just the bright colors, and, like, everything's very easily color-coded and clear, and it's adorable and graphically very clean, and, like, that's not something that I'm capable of doing, something graphically very clean. But, like, the art and the way it worked with the sound and the gameplay, A+. I loved it.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had to look that up as you were talking about it.
Yeah, no, it's a,
I see what
it's
you're,
a fun
I see
game.
What you're saying. Tim's second question is, if you could change anything about character generators in games, what would it be?
I guess he means by character generators, he says character creation, and I would say make sure when you're making characters that aren't white, don't make it so they look like brown face. That would be pretty good. Just more options that look more diverse. That'll probably be the biggest change. Hair, too. Different hair would be good.
Yeah, that I can co-sign that one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having my hair in a game would be amazing and have it not look
right?
like yarn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into that because then it'll turn into a rant and we'll never get end this episode. And Tim's last question was about music, and he wants to know if you could have a soundtrack for Project Solus, who would create it?
You know, I thought about this since you sent out these questions, and I have no idea. But I think if I had to choose, I could narrow it down to two. I've always loved Hans Zimmer because of what he did with Pirates of the Caribbean. Because there's one track on At World's End called I Don't Think Now Is the Best Time. And I love that track. It's 11 minutes long, but it's so good. It's like a weird epic medley of like every single song on the Pirates of the Caribbean soundtrack, as well as being the song for the climax. It's great. Or I'm going to butcher his name. Ramin Djawadi. God, I'm going to hear it for that. He did Game of Thrones. When I first heard his work, I was like, this stuff is not that great. But he's been getting really good in the last several years. And his stuff for Game of Thrones season 6 was chef kiss.
Oh, wow. Huh. Interesting. I am so bad at knowing composers, except for, like, Enon Zur, and I'm even blanking on some of the Mass Effect music folks. I would not be able to give an actual name for an answer. Be like, oh, this game, I like it. I want them to do music.
No, it's okay. I mean, one of my best friends going through high school, he was really into... He was a composer, so I got to know composer names fairly well. I would have said Michael Giacchino, but he does... Giacchino? I hecked it up. He does Disney soundtracks now. He did Zootopia and Up and basically everything that comes out of Disney or Pixar, he doesn't.
Oh, wow. I would want whoever scored The Witcher 3 because it has some beautiful, beautiful music.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't actually know game composers that well, so.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm terrible at it. It's like, I love the music. Couldn't tell you who it's by. But since we're talking about games, and, you know, this is how we kind of wrap up the show and wind down a bit, we usually end talking about what we've been playing or reading or watching if, you know, if we haven't had time for games in the past week. Mm-hmm. And since you are our guest, you get to go first.
So I don't really play games at my home studio that often anymore. But when I come out to my parents, I have to, like, disconnect from everything. And really the only game that works on my Mac is Stardew Valley. And currently I have 139 hours clocked on that game. I don't know, it's therapeutic. It doesn't make me really angry because a lot of games get me really angry really fast. Overwatch. But no, I love it. I just get to have a farm and a cat.
That's legit. There are days I'm just like, you know, this appeals to me. I could just like get on a bus and go somewhere and go farm. It could work.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we've mentioned Stardew Valley in like 5 out of the 6 recent episodes.
It's sneaking up on us. I tried it and now I could not open it because I would probably still be sitting there like farming beets or something and be like, oh shit, we should have recorded the show an hour ago. Yeah,
I
mean,
I had to stop half an hour before the show started because I was like, I'm going to lose track of time if I don't.
Yeah, it might be going on my laptop for my flight tomorrow, so who knows?
That's a good idea.
Well, assuming I get enough room to actually sit down with a laptop, that's always the fun part. Mm. But yeah, that is something where I enjoy, but I realize it could be a huge, huge time sink if I really get into it.
Yeah, well, like, that's the nice thing, is that I tend to work 12 to 14-hour days in my home studio, which is too much. But when I come out to my parents, I just disconnect completely. No work is getting done. So it's like the time that I would have spent like relaxing at home, I spend it here at my parents and playing Stardew Valley.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like you've been watching or reading a couple things.
Yes, I've been reading American Vampire, which is a graphic novel series. You couldn't give me like $100 to tell you who it's by. And I'm so sorry, but it's one of the most gorgeous graphic novels because sometimes it's pure monochrome except for the blood, and it's an interesting take on vampires. It takes place in like the 1920s, and a girl is brutally murdered, but she's turned into a vampire, and she's like, "What have you done to me?" And like, there's flappers, and there's like a cowboy. It's wicked. I love it. And as for watching, I would have written "Lie to Me," but I finished it right when you sent this, and I tend to watch Monster Factory on YouTube on loop when I just need to feel happy. Monster Factory's by Justin and Griffin of the McElroy brothers, of My Brother and My Brother and Me fame. And it's when they go into the character creators and they just make monsters, and it's hilarious.
That's cool. I may have to go check that out, because
it's so soothing, funny, Tanya.
Yeah. A soothing so show funny. About monsters. What could go wrong?
It like, the thing about the McElroy brothers that I think everyone here will appreciate, and hopefully your listeners will too, is that they, if anything gets kind of like, ooh, maybe you shouldn't say that, they both stop themselves. It's like, no, we can't do that. Nope, no, we can't do that. Like, because they know, like, I think they're aware enough of the situation of the world at large and society and how they're viewed, that most of their jokes are either at each other or what they're creating.
Nice.
And like, it's really palatable, their jokes. I'm sorry, I was remembering, because they did Spore, and oh, it's so funny.
That's cool.
The only thing I can say is that they make the sequel to Dogs in Spore.
Oh dear, you'll have to give us a link for our listeners, yeah. Because now I kind of want to check this out. You're cracking yourself up, aren't you? Well, Alicia cracks herself up, David, what have you been playing?
I have been investigating more just a different mobile game, because I'm getting bored with the ones I have. So I've tried out Marvel Future Fight and TMNT Legends. The Marvel game is actually, I kind of really like it. It plays like an old beat 'em up, but with a ton of like RPG elements laid over it.
Oh, interesting.
And it has a Marvel-sized roster. I think my team right now is Captain Marvel, Miss Marvel, and Vision, but from the movie rather than the books.
Interesting. Is that the one that's advertised on Twitter?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
I was just searching for stuff in the store. And and TMNT Legends is just like a turn-based Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game that seems okay, but it's not like well supported.
Huh. Interesting. I'll have to go check it out. I need some new mobile games on my phone, because I'm bored with what I have, and I'm realizing a lot of things don't work if you don't have data turned on.
Yeah.
Star Wars Uprising is shutting down.
What Uprising?
Star Wars Uprising. That Star Wars mobile game.
Oh,
apparently it's just shutting down, yeah.
Wow.
Weird.
Wasn't that pretty fast? It seems like it just came out.
Yeah, it's like a year old.
Oh.
That's that not sucks. Very long, though, for a mobile game.
Yeah. And Tanya, what have you been playing?
I tried this very cute and bright game that's still in Kickstarter, but they've got a really good demo out called Woven, and by the time this airs, I think the Kickstarter will be over, but it looks a lot like Little Big Planet, but that's where the similarities end. You start out as an elephant, and then as you meet other creatures, your little companion bot thingy scans them, so then you can go re-knit yourself to have like the elephant's body but a rabbit's legs or rabbit's ears, because in the demo you get to be an elephant or a rabbit. And so it was very bright, and it was fun, it was very relaxing, it was very pretty, and even though there's a giant snake that you meet, it wasn't like menacing. I was like, "You're a big cloth snake, I'm not scared of you." But it was a lot of fun, and I did wind up backing it, and I streamed it, because they were trying to get the word out, because they still do have a large chunk of funding they need before they reach their goal as of this recording. Elder Scrolls Legends, which is the card game of Elder Scrolls. So it's basically Hearthstone with Elder Scrolls lore. And I know someone will yell at me about that, that really likes Hearthstone and maybe doesn't like Elder Scrolls. But it's an open beta, so I was able to stream it finally. And I like it a lot better than Hearthstone, probably because I like the Elder Scrolls lore and world better than I like Warcraft, because I know nothing about Warcraft at all. I've gone back to The Witcher 3 because I got to the DLC and realized I'm way underpowered, and all that stuff I skipped in the first time I played is coming back to bite me. Yeah, so you really have to pay attention. You really need to do some of the side quests, especially the ones that'll give you better armor and different classes of armor, because you'll one, get XP, and two, you'll have better equipment when you get to those DLC stages. So I'm replaying it, taking a lot more time, doing a lot more side quests, and paying attention to my build, because it actually makes a difference in The Witcher 3. And then last is Virginia, that game, the visual novel with no dialogue and starring two black women, although there are no black people involved in developing the game. So I played through half of it on stream, and I'll finish it when I get back from GamerX. But It's very odd, and I don't know if either of you remember Twin Peaks or ever saw Twin Peaks, but that's what it reminds me of. The cutaways, the kind of what's going on, is it the present, is it the past, is it the future, which person am I now, kind of segues and sudden cutaways is what it reminds me of. And I'm feeling a way about it because, you know, the two main characters are black women, and the gist of it is you are an internal affairs investigator investigating your partner. It's just like, so you pit two black women against each other, and it's the 90s. And, you know, like, there's a lot of stuff that I'm seeing because of gender and ethnicity that I'm not seeing in write-ups about the game. So I pitched a couple places, and if I don't get any bites, I may just do a long Patreon post or something, because I'm kind of over the writing for free thing.
Yeah, of course.
So yeah, that's what I've been doing. And next time we record, I probably won't have anything to say because I've been gone for a few days. So yeah, that's it. And I may get some Stardew Valley in on the flight. You never know. And sadly, that is the end of the episode, which makes me sad because I could sit and chat with you forever, probably about stuff that wouldn't be relevant to our podcast, but it's always good to talk to you.
Aw, thank you, Tony. It's always good to talk to you, too.
Thank you.
And David, too. We can all talk. Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. And for people who want to follow your work and what you're doing, where is the best place to find you online?
Definitely my Twitter, because I'm the most active on there. Or my Tumblr.
Okay.
I could probably tack that on. Yeah, my Twitter and my Tumblr are my most active. I don't really post on Facebook anymore because I feel like the algorithms are just bad, and I just get lost in the sea of Facebook. So, no, I much prefer Twitter.
Yeah, Facebook is the devil.
It is.
I'm starting to feel that way. David, where can folks find you?
Well, I'm on Twitter at Red Conversation, and I'm on Patreon at patreon.com/redconversation. And I'm also on another podcast about movies, which is called Hipster Fight, because I have owned the domain since I bought it from a guy.
Okay. So do you have to, like, first talk about how you like things and they were cool before everyone else liked they were cool?
No, we just talk about whatever. We're just using the name because I already owned it.
Okay. See, it's like, now I want to have, like, a bunch of hipster fights, though. It's like you named it Hipster Fight. That's kind of what I want.
It is, you know, magnificent branding, though. You're never going to forget that name.
No, I'm not. But, you know, I just want an episode now where basically people are arguing about how they liked whatever's hot now way before it was cool.
I love it.
Yeah. It's just me being pedantic. I'm silly. But the people listening to the show realize that by now, I hope. And I'm Cipher of Tear pretty much everywhere. If you find someone else as a Cipher of Tear, they're impersonating me, so go tell on them. Don't tell me, just tell, go report them somewhere. And with that, we are done for this episode. Yes.
Done like dinner.
Stick a fork in all of us. We're done. That's it. Yeah. And next week, we will have the wonderful Mike Moody, the person behind our music. So finally, this will come full circle. We will have Mike on the show. So see you in a week, y'all. Bye.
Bye. Thank you for having me. We'll be right back.